Blog Talk Radio.
The streets don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your hosts Boyd and Lucinda for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back.
Good evening and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back show. Today is February 16th, 2011. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd. And our topic is, as always, the Streets Don't Love You Back. Join us every Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes as we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues. We have an awesome show for you tonight with our guest, Mr. B.J. Billy Joe Chambers. And he grew up in Marianna, Arkansas, and later moved to Detroit, only to become known, along with his brothers, as some of the most notorious drug lords in American history. Just got out of prison after serving 22 years, just finished a book about his life, and tonight we're going to hear him for the very first time since he's been home, and we're going to hear his story and what happened to him and his brothers. So now let me welcome Boyd to the show.
Hey, hey, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight to a great, great show and a great, great, powerful interview. And none other than my homeboy from back in the day, the real B.J. Chambers, you feel me? The man who made some mistakes in his life, paid for the mistakes, and now he's on a crusade to help the youth out here and encourage them to do what's real, you know? Without further ado, we're going to pass the mic over to my homeboy, B.J. Chambers.
Hey, how everybody doing? My name is B.J. Chambers. As they stated earlier, I'm from Marion, Arkansas, where I grew up. I migrated to Detroit in the late 70s, where I met a young lady named Niecy, who I eventually stayed with, and down the line I got involved with drugs and eventually got in a great deal of trouble and got indicted by the feds and was actually sentenced to 45 years. Somewhere down the line, my case was reversed by the appeals court, and needless to say, I was re-sentenced to 27 years, which now turned out to be a blessing because I've served my time, and now I'm free and living in Little Rock, Arkansas now.
My man. You know, first of all, I want to say, man, I give a big shout-out to your whole family, man, your moms, your dad, your brothers and your sisters, and to your brother Larry and Otis and Willie. You know, I want to serve a
That's
big shout-out to them as well. And, you know, they was my homeboys as well back in the day, you know. And what I want to start off asking you, B.J., tell the viewers a little bit about what made you get in the game deep like you did after meeting a young lady. Because I remember, you know, when you were selling weed at the store over there by Country Room back in the day, you know. So how did all that thing take off? From that little bitty introduction until when Chamber Brothers went into full swing?
Well, actually, you know, like you say, it was like small steps, actually. It wasn't nothing intentionally that I planned it. It was just a gradual approach in the street life. You know, I started off with a very small selling nickel bags of weed on Drexel Street, and where also I eventually started selling Dillon and pills and stuff like that, and down the line, which I look at it was somewhat like training, you know, because weed is kind of not a really heavy game to be in because I wasn't making that much money in it, you know, but I was able to save some money, you know, down the line. And so, but when the heavy stuff came, which was cocaine, I had the money to to jump right into it. And when I say jump right into it, that's what happened. Jump right into it, and it took off like a jet airplane, you know. And before you know it, it had exploded into one of the world, you know, largest epidemic from city to city, not simply because of me. You know, I only dealt in Detroit. But before you knew it, you know, this was something that was plaguing every state and every city. You know, so once again, it wasn't anything intentionally what I planned it. It was just that drugs were all I knew. I was young when I first got involved with it. I was roughly, I think, about 16 years old, and I was pretty much, I think, 21 when I started selling cocaine. And everything pretty much went from there.
Dig that. And one thing I want to ask you, VJ, who came up with the idea when y'all opened up the $5 rock houses back in the day, you know what I mean? Because I got to give y'all props. You know, y'all was the first one who started that and opened up $5 spots in the city. So I want to know who came up with that idea when that flowed up in the city.
Well, actually, it was me that came up with the idea. And the reason I came up with the idea, because so many people were coming up short. You know, when they was coming to buy a dime rock, they would always have $7, $7.50, $8, $9, change, a bunch of change and stuff like that. So I figured since everybody will at least always be over $5, you know what I'm saying now, trying to get a 10, I figured it would be more economic to sell a person a 5. You know, then if he wanted to buy more than that, then he would get a 2 or 3. So that's pretty much where that came up with.
My man. And then from that right there, I remember when that took off as well. When that took off, you had several houses in the city at that time. You know, what I knew at the time on the personal level, you had about 200-300 at one time, but I'm quite sure it probably grew a little bit bigger than that. Tell me how that monster created.
Well, actually, how it is, you know, you have so many houses going, and they don't actually be all of yours, but you're fueling all of them. So, you know, and not actually they all be running at the same time. So you kind of have, like, houses in reserve, actually, you know. And so that's how it really goes, you know. But long as you got, say, 10 or 15 houses going strong, hey, you know, a person will be up under the assumption that you got, say, 100 or 200 houses at one time. And, you know, just like, you know, me and you, you know, we acknowledge the apartment building over there on Palmer. You know, man, that apartment building would do at the minimum $80,000, $90,000, you know, a day. And on a good day, it might topple a couple of $100,000. So when you got you know, hey, man, it's hard to find any business these days that making that type of money per day. You know, and the guys who were trying to get in the game back then, you know, man, they was lucky to turn $5,000 a day, you know. So that's how that come about, you know, where a person will be up under the assumption that you have that many going at one time.
Right, and I remember as well when the game had got to the point where you all had built y'all empire up from $3 million a day to almost up to $50 million a year in that game, you know what I mean, and became some of the biggest drug lords in the state of Detroit and throughout your hometown, Arkansas, and other cities as well, you know. Tell us
right.
A little bit about what was happening when all that was coming at you, BJ, at that age of your life.
Oh, and in other words, you mean about the money aspect of it?
Yeah, the whole shabam. You know, what was your everyday life of living like that? Explain that to the viewers.
Well, you know, that life is pretty much. It's like running a business, you know. You know, you got to keep the cars on the road, you know. You know, you got to keep, you know, houses supplied. You got to keep houses maintenance. You know, they need windows, toilets, you know, all these types of things. You know, you got money piles up everywhere. You know, you got girls everywhere. You know, you got people who, you know, trying to get on the payroll, getting kicked off the payroll. You know, I mean, you're buying whatever you want. You're eating whatever you want. You're going wherever you want to, you know. And you're watching your back. You know, you're making sure. And then you got the police, you know, gunning for you. So this is a big, chaotic scene being controlled, you know, being kept under control every single day. Because once something gets loose, a malfunction, you know, it should always be disaster.
My man, you know. So by that right there, what would you tell these youths of the day, DJ, that look at a DJ in the Chambers Brothers, or might look at a Freeway Ricky Ross, or might look at a Maserati Rick or Cliff Jones or Demetrius Holloway? You know, what advice would you give them about this lifestyle?
Could you just repeat that one more time?
I say, at the height of your career, I say, and in today's world, what advice would you give these youths out here that's even thinking about that lifestyle or out there in that world?
Well, the advice that I can give anyone, youth, elder, or whoever it may be who's thinking about entering that world, is that they got to be ready to pay the piper. Only a few people escape out of this game unscathed. You know, it's prison, death, or something awaits you there. So my advice would be not to do it. Go to school. You know what I'm saying? Now, learn a trade. But whatever you do, do not pick that sack up. You know, do not think that you're going to hustle the streets, and the hustle in the streets is not going to hustle you back. And your book, in the title of your show, you know, the streets don't love you back. It's a good title. And they need to take that and run with it, because the streets do not love you back. You know, you get in the game, it's going to always be, you know, people skinning and grinning and patting you on the back, you know, and love the money. But when everything is said and done, it's going to be you laying in the coffin, or you sitting in front of that judge, you know, waiting to get sentenced to probably every day of your life.
My man. And I want to go to DJ. When how did you feel? Are you there, DJ?
I'm here. You said, how did I feel?
Yeah, I just wanted to know, how did you feel when the tape, one of you all's tape, hit Detroit media? Like I said, at that time, I was at my mother's house when that came on Channel 7. You know, I'll never forget that as long as I live, you know. And I seen that tape hit the media in the DEA hand. You dig what I'm saying? How did that make you feel? You feel me? When you actually seen that on TV yourself? Or did you see that on TV before that came down, DJ?
Hey, I did. And it was ironic that, you know, I'm the kind of person, at least I was the kind of person then, but I kind of like listening to the radio when I rode around in the streets. You know, I didn't really bump the loud music, although I did, you know. But I would listen to the radio more than I listened to music. And I was hearing about this right here on the radio. And I was saying to myself, who is these people that they keep talking about? You know, and they kept saying, okay, well, we're going to show it on this particular night at this time. So me and my friends, you know, actually met over to my house, because we knew when the news aired, we was going to know the people that they was talking about, because we dealt with pretty much everybody in the street. We had no clue it was us. So when they first aired it, and we seen my name flash across there, actually, I was flabbergasted. I mean, everybody kind of just, you know, just looked stunned, like, how is this? And then as it kept going, then it gave us more detail about how this tape came about, which was in a drug raid. You know, I knew my brother, you know, Fam and Tape and stuff like that, but the Tape himself or his friend, one of his employees, counting money and bragging about it, and then let it fall in the hands of the police, man, it was shocking to everybody, especially me.
Right, right, because like I said, I remember, man, and, you know, your brother was on there. He counted 500,000 on there, and he said y'all was one to the hood, which y'all
right.
gave back to the neighborhood anyway, you know.
Right.
Even though y'all were doing wrong, like I said, drugs is wrong to sell, and we all know that. But you all did give back to the neighborhood as far as taking care of people and doing things for people. So just want to let people know, you know, BJ and his brother just wasn't, you know, no guys who hustled and did wrong. They was doing wrong, but still trying to get back in certain ways. But the game is twisted out here when you're in that lifestyle. And in that kind of lifestyle, it takes you in the areas of life that sometimes you don't want to be in, you know? So I just want to put that out there. Once that had happened, did they come to your house, or how did that jump off when y'all started getting knocked? You know, because I remember when you had the black BMW used to ride in sometime. You know, how did y'all get twisted?
Well, actually, you know, we were taking hits for approximately 18 months. You know, just, you know, dolls getting kicked in, vehicles being confiscated, money, jewelry, et cetera, et cetera. And so on this one particular day, my son was actually born, and when he came home from the hospital, I had to go out that morning to get him some supplies. But to make a long story short, I made a detour over to one of my brother's houses that lived close in the neighborhood. And on my way out, I happened to notice this particular guy. He was by himself. So I'm thinking that since it was a pretty much white neighborhood at that time, I seen his brother. I just figured, well, maybe he might be over there, got him a nice little white ball or something, you know, he's kicking me with. And so I've never alerted my brother or the other guy that was with me. Two other people with me. One was my brother. Another one was a friend of mine named Pooh. But I kept my eye on this guy all the time just in case there was something else jumping off. And so as we took off and eventually made a right turn, I noticed that he took off out of his parking space without anyone coming outside. But down the road, this guy, he was a police officer, as I found out, because he cut us off at a light and pulled a .357 Magnum out on him. And when he learned who we actually were, he got on his radio and said that he had the Chambers brothers in custody on Dickerson and Otto Drive. And, man, I'm telling you, it seemed like it was in seconds. It seemed like it was in seconds, man. Police was arriving everywhere, from every direction. So the first thing hit my mind was, what happened? Something had jumped off, you know. The dates that they accused us of. I never thought it was going to be an indictment, you know, by the, you know, federal government, or I'm being charged with a drug charge. I'm thinking maybe it was a homicide or someone accused us of a hit, a contract hit, or something like that, and we'll all straighten that out once we get down to the precinct. But when we got to the precinct, I found out it was a federal indictment, you know. And it was an X amount of counts, and let me see, I think it was 14 or 15 counts on this indictment, and I was named in one of the counts as being the leader, and my brother was named in another count being a leader, and that particular count, I was actually facing life. And that what really stunned me, because I asked the agent about it, and he said, man, you phase in life, DJ, you know, just like that. And at that time, I still could not grasp what was going on, because I've never really been in trouble before. So when he said life, I'm still saying to myself, what the hell I have done, you know, just being ignorant. I've been ignorant to everything that's been transpiring in my life, you know, and what I've been doing. I did not feel that I should be facing life. You know, I'm looking at, man, everybody selling dope. Ain't nobody doing, hell, I didn't feel I wasn't really doing nothing illegal. Be truthful about it. you know, but it all was said and done, you know, I was doing something illegal, and the jury and the grand jury agreed with it that I were, and, you know, and you know the rest of the story.
Right, right. And, you know, at the height of that right there, BJ, how much money was confiscated in that raid that time when they wrapped everything up, when they kicked y'all buildings down, you know what I mean, and how, you know, when they finally locked you up that day?
Well, at that particular time, man, honestly, I can really say at that particular day how much money was confiscated. Because everything that I had in the street, I left it there. I never called anybody, inquired about it, or say, hey, drop that off or pick that up. I actually accepted that it was over. You know, when I fail, people still owe me $10,000, $20,000, $50,000, $80,000, $100,000, et cetera, et cetera. I had money everywhere, and something just told me, though, don't call nobody. The game is over. And exactly how I played it. But during the course of this investigation, maybe a few millions was actually taken during raids and other things like that. You know, so it was a significant loss, and they made sure it could be that way before they even knocked me.
Right, right. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to pass the mic over to my Mrs. BJ, and I definitely, once again, appreciate you being on the show and spreading this message to these young brothers and sisters, man, that, you know, what they out here trying to do in that drug game, that's done been did, you dig, and everybody who done been in that done failed in some kind of way, you know? And
Right.
To
okay.
Yeah, BJ, I just wanted to go back to your childhood growing up in Marianna, Arkansas. It's reported that you guys were, that the whole town is pretty much a very poor town, but your family didn't have a whole lot of money. And I think you're one of how many siblings, 12 or 14?
Yeah, it was 14 of us all together, nine boys and four girls.
Wow. So
yeah.
Tell us what it was like growing up in poverty like that, with that many kids in a family, and what your family was going through at that time.
Well, me, you know, it was hard, you know, because we lived in actually a four-room house. And so I slept in the bed with my twin. I had a twin brother and another brother. So, it was it's always four or five people per room, you know, and things, you know, was tight. Food, which, you know, poverty, you know, that's what poverty leads you to. And
right.
But I was somewhat fortunate out of all of the other siblings, actually, me and my twin, because a guy from Germany actually took me and my brother, my twin brother, and actually took care of us. And he actually did that ever since I probably was like 18 months old. But,
mm-hmm.
You know, we had a outside, you know, bathrooms and rats. We lived right around fields, so rats invaded our home constantly, you know, and a pump, we had to pump our water, you know, from outside. You know, we had to heat our water to take a bath. We had to all share a cup or to dip in a bucket to drink water. You know, that didn't change, that lifestyle really didn't change until I was, I guess, about 12 or 13 years old before we actually got an inside restroom and running water, actually. So, you know, we lived a pretty rough life coming up, you know, struggle.
Right.
My mom, she pretty much stayed at home and took care of us. And my dad kind of worked at, you know, a couple of jobs, actually, to provide for us. And then I guess with anything, as the siblings start growing up, leaving, going on to college and to the military and running away, that took the burden off my mom, and she was able to manage to take care of us a little bit better. You know, right. So, you know, you can imagine that my mom actually had her first kid, I think, when she was like 14 years old.
Wow.
You know, and during a time like that, we're talking about, man, we're talking about, what, in the 40s.
Right.
You know, when she had that, you know, it was tight, not just for our family, it was tight for the whole entire community.
Right. Right, and
yeah,
it wasn't uncommon for people to go from the South up to Detroit to try to get jobs in the
yeah, it was just like
car industry,
you know, anytime, you know, gold, you know how, you know, back in the days you hear where gold is, everybody traveled, they had to mine gold or oil, you know, and when they had the plants there, you need an education or anything like that, you just need a willing heart to work. You know, if you have
right.
that type of spirit, you can easily travel from any country, town, or state and go to Detroit and get a job.
Right. And that's what you guys did. You went there looking for employment, and that was it. I mean, you didn't, and that was your intention. Let's go and get a better job.
Exactly.
And one of your
exactly.
brothers,
yeah.
one of your brothers was already there. He was a mail handler. He delivered mail,
yeah,
or?
Well, I had a couple of brothers. I had two brothers there. One of them actually did the welding on Whitehead and Kale train. That was a company. They put trains together. And he was making nice money. And then I had another brother worked at a post office, you know. So they were actually
right.
doing good for themselves compared to where we had actually came from.
Right. And so one of those brothers, or both of them actually, kind of saved their money, and that's how you guys got the convenience store in the beginning, the party store?
Well, no, not actually. Actually, that was me. I had actually came up on the money. I had made
okay.
some money at that time in the weed game. You know, I was selling plenty of weed, and I was, you know, stacking my chips, as they say back then, in the slang, put my money up to the side, and I had saved enough. And I was able to not only get me a house, I had bought a house on Newport. But I also
mm-hmm.
was able to buy this storefront on Kirchhoff.
Took memories when you said Kirchhoff, VJ.
Oh yeah, oh man, you know that was the hood.
That was the spot, man. No disrespect to the fans, but yeah, we used to all big hang out there, you know.
Yeah, hey, you know that one too far from Cliff. My man Cliff, you know Cliff went too far from there, you know.
Right, you already know, man. You know, we're going to give a big shout-out
yeah.
to our other homeboy that should become a home tomorrow on the 17th. We're going
to
give a big shout-out
to
CJ.
He has to be out tomorrow.
For sure.
Oh, that's
yeah.
what time it is.
No doubt.
That's what time
well,
it
you
is.
See, everybody, we brought BJ to you like we promised. You dig what I'm saying? We gave BJ and his brother and them a shout-out in my book, The Streets Don't Love You Back. And that book is in Afro-American History Museum in Detroit, Michigan, where you can read about guys who done lived their life that I done been with, and it's all real now. And BJ is one of the first ones to step down and come home. So if you ain't got The Streets Don't Love You Back book, go get that. And then tell them your book, BJ, as well.
I have a book out. Wrote, actually, and had published February or March of 2007, title Prodigy Hustle about BJ Chambers. It's a very interesting story, true story actually, about my rise and fall and some of the people that I met, like Cliff, White Boy Rick, Bush Jones, the Best Friends and the Curry Brothers, and the story and the list can, the list can go on and on and on to some of the people who I bumped heads with. You had mentioned a guy, I think, sometime about a couple of weeks ago that he was talking about, but he was actually murdered in a house, you know, and then it was said that the best friends had did it, and it was said that someone else had did it, but I can't think of his name right now.
Right, yeah, you know how the game was back then. They were always trying to pin some up on somebody, you feel me?
Exactly.
Like we tell people, though, when you get into the street world, there's no rules no more, you feel me? There's no constant in that lifestyle. So we are saying to all youths around the world, go to school, get your education. That's what gets you out of poverty. That's what gets you out the ghetto. Because you're talking to a man, B.J. Chambers, who's going to have millions of dollars in the drug trade. And at the end of the day, when B.J. went to prison, it wasn't no money. It wasn't no homeboys. It wasn't no homegirls. B.J. was sentenced to 45 years in prison. So that's a man that can actually tell you the streets definitely don't love you back. And I just want to say one thing, B.J., did you ever think after all these years you would see yourself on BET, American Gangster, telling you and your brothers mistakes y'all made in y'all life to open up these youth eyes as well? You know, when you first got a grasp of that, how did that make you feel that a message was being said about the mistakes you made and your brother to try to open these youth eyes?
Well, the thing is, like, the way I thought at that time was I was really shocked to even know that I would be labeled as an American gangster. You know, that's something that, you know, I didn't think that I deserved, actually. You know what I'm saying now? I was just a regular person. But to see now that these people here saying, hey, this guy here was the man. You know, I guess you can say I'm modest, you know, or humble or whatever. I never looked at myself as being the man, and I did this, and I took over that. You know, but you hear so much, you got to accept it. You know, you just got to accept where the chips lay. You know, and to see that, then I'm saying to myself, okay, then, you done aired me all over the world. Okay, I got a book out. You know, I've been in Time Magazine, the Esquire Magazine, pretty much every newspaper you want to name, USA Today, and on and on and on. And I'm hoping that I can be able to use this to help others, you know, to keep them from following in my footsteps. You know, so it's not that, you know, just like once I can go back again, you know, to the title of your book, The Streets Don't Love You Back. Because, man, that is actually true. If a lot of people don't realize that, I'm not. When all the champagne is being popped, you know, and all the money is being spent, and all the women's and this and that, once it's over with, the streets is not going to love you no more when you're dead or you're in prison. People just got to keep being reminded of that. But once again, I just got to accept the role that I played, you know, and learn from my mistakes and hope that others would take the opportunity to, you know, conversate with. Ask me questions. Who is on your show at this present moment, you know, got anything they want to ask or want me to talk to maybe some relatives that travel up that same path, they can contact you. You can contact me on a regular basis. You know what I'm saying now? And you relay that message over to me, and we'll see what we can do to assist them.
My man. So we're going to go to the first caller at the top of the list. 404. Hello?
Wait. We're going to go to the caller. The last number is 2065. If you would like to speak with BJ, go ahead. You're on here.
Hello? What's up, BJ? What's up, cool dude?
Hey, I'm here, baby. What's going on?
You familiar with that lingo? Remember that cool dude, man? I used to work for you for a couple years, man. I just wanted to say I appreciate you, man. You used to give me a lot of advice. You know, I'm from Camden and Gunston, man. I worked in the building on Dickerson, too, and Dickerson and Mack.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah. So, you
how
know,
you
man.
Doing?
I just,
Are you okay out there?
Oh, man, good. Now, I'm doing comedy now, too, man. I'm off into the comedy. I'm about 39 years old now.
Okay, that's what time it is.
Ben, you know, man, I just wanted to say, man, it got rough, man, after y'all left the city, man. It got real rough, you know. I had lost my mother. I lost my mother, and then my father got locked down for killing the preacher. But, you know, man, I'm holding up. Me and my brother used to work for you. He told me, tell you what's up, too. You might know him as Cutthroat. But they used to call him Cutthroat.
Yeah.
He got
his
neck cut. Yeah, that's my brother. And he had did 20, and he out now, man. He told me, tell you what's up, man. It's a blessing you out, man.
No doubt, man. I made it, you know, it was a long road, but I'm here now.
Well, yeah, man. I just wanted to say thanks. Thanks for the discipline. Thanks for keeping me in school. You know, man, I used to go to Denby, and I remember you telling me to go to school. Go to school and do my thing, man. And I'm just saying, I appreciate that. And I've always carried that with me, even in the job world, you know, and all of that stuff. I always carried the themes that you engraved in us, man. You just constantly, you was always talking to me. And I appreciate
that's what
you,
time man. Is.
So, man, but you ain't heard that cool dude in a minute, man. And I'll be using that on stage. What's up, cool dude? That's what's up,
is
man.
This,
it's good,
this,
good to hear from
is this
you.
Is this Troy?
Man, this comedian Troy Coleman, man, don't ever forget me, BJ. I'm finna blow up, man.
Okay, hey, no, I ain't gonna forget you, baby.
Remember that name, Troy Coleman. But
I got you.
Yeah, man, the whole clique, man. I ain't got no friends. Everybody dead and gone, man. But man, I'm just saying, I always carry myself like you because you was like dangerous, silent dangerous. You know what I mean? Just. Classy cat. You know who I'm getting in trouble, man. I'm just saying I got that from you. Thanks. Appreciate
that. There you go.
Real talk. But, man, I hear one more question. I got a question, though. How was it like in jail? Was people giving you love or, you know?
Well, the thing is, you know, in there, you know,
robberies or what?
You repeat that so I can understand the full question that you asked.
Not your life, but the 20 years, you know, the little 22 years you did.
Well, actually, man, you know, it's like this right here. You, starting off, you know, and then in the middle, or even at the end, man, it's just like that. It's something that you just don't see ending because it goes on for so long, and, you know, and the Fed, you know, travel you all over the world by sending you to all these different prisons and stuff like that. You know, but since I'm out, I don't feel like I actually spent that much time in there. But it seems like there's no end to it.
Yeah, man, that's a long time. And I'm sorry to hear about your baby mama, Diane, too, man.
I'm sorry to hear about that, man.
I ain't heard about that, man. Damn.
That was a shocker to me, man. You know how I felt about that. You know, I had three kids by, you know?
Yeah, I feel you. Yeah, man, I don't even get to see my kids now, man. I live in the Pontiac area. You kind of know how it is in Pontiac. You know, that's north.
Yeah, that's the people down
there. Yeah, man, I caught the flux down here. You know how it is down here. It's different. So, man, after here, I moved to Atlanta. They was dogging me down there. And my baby mama gay now, man, and took off with the kids. Yeah, man, I'm telling all that on stage. I'm telling all the raids, man, I was in and never went to jail. never.
Hey, but you know, that's what the name of, you know, of my man book, you know, the streets don't love you back, man, that's how it is, you know?
Yep, exactly. Man, I preach the same thing, man, but yeah, man, I just wanted to say I appreciate you. You know, you always cross my mind because, you know, I didn't know if you had did life or whatever, you know. I was like, damn, man, I hold my man didn't get that much done.
Oh, yeah, it broke me off, man. It damn near like it was life. It wasn't life, but it could have just might as well have been, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, man, I feel you.
Right.
Ben, you should have got paid for that Biggie song, that Biggie Small song, the 10 Crack Commandments, man. Y'all made that up.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
You should have got that copyright, man. I was telling people, man, but they ain't even believe me. I was like, dog,
Davis
made them commandments. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, hey, so we appreciate you, Brother Coleman, and we're going to go to another caller. And we appreciate you linking back up with your comrades, you know?
Okay.
All right, we're going to go to another caller.
Yeah, the next caller is the last four digits of the number is 5965. Hello, caller.
All right.
Hello.
In the house, caller.
Hello, how you doing? Hi, I'm Phyllis from Detroit, of course. Rob and Lucinda's cousin. Hi, BJ.
Oh, hi, Phyllis.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great, and your message was just simply wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
I'm from the east side of Detroit myself, and I was just, when you spoke on how you met up with all your people in jail, and I was just thinking in my mind, that's really deep, like how everybody was on the streets making money and enjoying the life, and then the end result, everybody ended up, some of them, in prison together.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt about that. Believe me, you'll bump into people, you'll bump into a person in prison that you hadn't even seen in 10 years, and that's what, and then you'll find out that's where he's been all the time. You'll think that he just simply moved from the neighborhood or went out of town or something or whatever situation may be, but you'll find out this person, he'll tell you, he said, man, I've been locked up, man. You know, they accused me of this or they busted me for that coming out of his place or whatever situation may be. You know, the prison is something else. You know, you be in there with some of your best friends, your relatives, and some of your worst enemies.
I just want to, thank you for the message, and I hope, you know, you continue with your message because the youth do need it as well as some of these adults out here, and we know that the streets don't love you back. That just made me think of it even more when you touched on that subject, how everybody meet up in jail, then a lot of them died. You know, that was kind of just deep to me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. One of my good friends, his name, we call him Rip. You know, me and Rip, we fell around about the same time, 88, 89. And Rip got some action off of the crack law because he still sort of had like 7 more years to do. But he was scheduled to go home about 30 days ago, and he messed up on his paperwork, so he had to stay there 2 weeks extra. But while he was there, he had a heart attack and died.
See how life offer you. I mean, you know.
Man, we want to.
And my family is from Arkansas as well. And how you were saying about the water. About me being from Detroit, when we would go down to Pine Bluff, I would get pissed off. Like, we couldn't take a shower every day. In Detroit, we used to take in a shower every day. We used to have to pour the water out the ground or however, you know. So, I can relate and identify. I just want to thank you once again, and I'm going to let somebody else have the floor.
Yeah, but most people are
calling
and up.
All right, we appreciate you, cuz.
All right.
We'll go to the next caller.
We're going to go to the next caller, the last. And then we have a few callers. Please be patient with us, and we're going to get to you all here. The next one, the last four digits is 4375. Hello, caller.
All right.
Hi. Hello, you guys.
Hey,
hi, Rob and Lucia.
Thank you.
This is Stephanie, Gigi.
Oh, hi.
Hey, what's good with you?
How you guys doing? I have to call in and just first congratulate you, BJ, for returning home. And
thank you.
Message is very, very deep for me because I lost my son 10 months ago to street violence.
Sorry to hear that.
I'm looking forward to meeting you. I don't know if Rob has told you about me, but we're doing some powerful stuff to get the word out and educate these kids on that it's not about the street.
Oh, no doubt about that. I mean, that is a challenge, you know, but someone got to take it up, you know, and we got to inform these kids, especially the kids. Because, you know, they think it's all fun and games. They all think it's fun and games because majority of the time they get in trouble is really like a slap on their wrist because of their age, you know, but it's just really a build-up. It's a build-up to a disaster, it's basically when you got a lot of young guys or teenagers, male or female, hanging together in groups, that's what you can really call blind leading the blind. That's what was with me. None of us never had no sense because, hey, only thing we seen was money.
Mm-hmm.
But
they're not even making money these days. They just out here playing and killing each other for no reason.
That's it. Now that's what it's turned into now.
Yeah.
That's what it's turned into now. Now it ain't even about the money now. It's all about, you know, hey, I'm this and I'm that and I got a gun and I can hound on you.
Yes. Well, next year I'm doing a benefit rally titled Welling Mothers. We are the voices of our nation's children, and I'm hoping to see you there. So I definitely want to call in and introduce myself to you.
Oh, well, hey, I appreciate that. And make sure you keep Rob informed about what's going on and stay in contact with me through Rob, you know, after the show. If you love to, you know, he'll give you my number. You can reach me because we want to join
okay.
you in your effort, you know, to get the word out and to keep things alive so people can, you know what's going on.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Have a good night.
Okay, we're going to go to the next caller here, and the last four digits of the number is 0598. Hello, caller.
0598. 0598, last four digits. You on the air? All right, we'll go to 4375.
We'll go to the next one, 9958. Actually, yeah, 9958.
Okay, 9958.
Hello?
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 Hey, how you doing, Carl?
Yes, me.
Hey, you can hear me?
All right, you on the air. Would you like to ask BJ a question?
Oh, snap, I didn't know how to get through. Hey, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, bro?
Hello, is this the show with BJ on?
Yeah, it is.
Mr. BJ is on the air now.
Oh, okay, I'm getting a delay in my apartment. I don't know if y'all can hear me that good.
BJ is on the phone right now.
You said you can hear me good?
Yes, we
can hear you real good. BJ on the air now.
Okay, I just wanted to say, I know it sounds kind of tacky to say that I'm a fan of you or whatnot and what you did, but it's kind of like, I don't promote drugs, and I'm not saying people should do it, but you kind of inspired me to know that no matter how bad my situation was, that you can't change your circumstances around. Even though you kind of did it in a way that America looked at as, oh, that's criminal and you shouldn't do that kind of stuff, it's amazing that you came from 13 kids in a house in Arkansas poor and went on to be, you know, whatever. And, yeah, it's illegal, but it shows a lot of people that I know that you can be working at a nothing and be unemployed and laid off, but if you apply yourself and you get your hustle on, then you could be something and you could be better than what you are. And it's like, crazy. I mean, it's like you shouldn't do nothing illegal, I know. But you inspire people to know that you can change your circumstances, maybe for the right way, but just because you're down don't mean that you can't change your life around and be something. And it's crazy
that
I'm talking to you because it's like, you know, you really are like an inspiration to me and so many people I know. And, you know, I'm happy that you're out of jail, and it's crazy talking to you because it's like, you know, I call myself like Little BJ. Not Little BJ, because, you know, I'm grown, but it's kind of like I kind of pattern myself after you, but not in a negative way, more like if BJ can turn his life around, then I'm going to turn my life around, too. And it's like I call myself Little, you know, BJ Chambers. Well, now, it's crazy, but it's like and your name is like my Facebook password and stuff, but it's crazy, but I'm just happy to be home. You know, I'm happy you're home and whatnot. And it's crazy. I can't believe I'm talking to you because you're like an inspiration to me in so many ways. You know,
and
really.
Caller, where are you from?
I'm in Atlanta, Georgia right now.
Okay.
My man, you know, hey, Atlanta, Georgia, you putting it on the map, my brother, you know. And just makes me smile because it's a blessing to have people out there to notice you like that, BJ, and to notice. You out here to make a true change, and even though you did wrong, you showed the world that you can do whatever you want to do whether it's on the legal scale or righteous scale. But if you would have took the legal scale and made it a righteous scale, then that would have been what it was. But, you know, unfortunately, God had you travel the unrighteous road to when it was time for you to hit the pavement again, you was able to tell the world, look where the Creator brought me from. Now I'm here to spread his message, and now I'm in his army. You feel me? So everything played the part where God wanted it to play. So I just wanted to say big ups, brother, you know what I mean, for even having that, you know, inspiration from BJ's state.
No doubt.
Hey, can I ask another question?
Go ahead, my brother.
Yeah.
BJ, hello?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm listening to you.
You there.
Now that you're out, what are your plans in terms of, like, you know, what are you planning to do now that you're out?
Well, right now, I just recently got out the halfway house a couple of months ago. So at this present moment, I'm just working a job. I'm still up on the supervision. You know, so it's just that I'm just so ecstatic to be free, you know.
Right.
And I got to take it day at a time at this present moment. You know, so it's not,
I don't
really have big dreams or anything right now, you know what I'm saying, now, you know, because I've been blessed all my life. But, you know, God has blessed me at this very moment to not just walk down 22 and a half years, but to come out in my right mind. So, because I got to come out
right.
in my right mind, because I got to convey the message. I got to, you know, pretty much back in the biblical days when God gave, you know, used his spirit in people to write down what he wanted them to write down. Now, in my case, I went through this right here. I seen the street. I seen the prison. I seen pretty much everything. Now, it's my job to tell a story so everybody can understand
right.
it now. So I'm blessed
right.
in that way. I'm here. I'm alive. You know, a lot of my friends have perished, not only when I was out there. A lot of friends and family members have perished since I was, you know, doing, you can just imagine that, how many people have passed during them 22 and a half years of my incarceration. You know, so obviously I'm blessed.
Very, very blessed.
No doubt.
Do you still talk to Otis? I mean, like, and all them?
Well, yeah, Otis, he won't be home until around about April. And Willie, my brother Willie, he's been home over 3.5 years now.
Oh, that's good. That's good. That's good. That's good. Wow,
that's
crazy. I know you're going to get to the next call and all that. I don't know. I don't want to keep too much of y'all time. But is there any way I can keep in contact with you, BJ?
Yes, Rob. Rob is the man who, if anybody want to stay in contact with me, get a message, talk to me, have got an event, or whatever it may be, just contact Rob, and Rob got my number. He got it, anything. You can check me. I even got a Facebook. My daughter hooked me up with a Facebook even. You know what I'm saying? So I'm reachable. I'm reachable, and I'm available.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying now?
Let me get my pen. You said you're on Facebook?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook.
Do I just, like, what's your name? What's the your regular Billy Joe Chambers?
Yeah, Billy Chambers. Yeah, just
Billy
go on
Chambers.
Facebook, Billy. Yep, Billy Chambers, yeah.
Okay, cool. Is there any way you said I can get Rob my number, or how
yeah,
do I do
yeah,
that?
Rob, you know, after the show, you know, because we got other callers after the show or whatever, you know, just contact Rob. Just send him an email or whatever it says, whatever it may be, and let him know what you want, and he'll convey that over to me.
And you
okay,
can
cool.
join our you can join our website also. It's the streets don't love you back .ning.com, and we have all the information there about everything
the
that
streets.
We
need. The streets don't love
and
you back
also,
ning.com.
The streets don't love you back .ning.com.
Hey, also,
okay, cool.
You can give them a link or something to my website, or if they want to, you know, go straight to it from there, they can. I think that'll be very helpful for them.
My man.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
And
we're
going to put some information up on the movement site, a little more information for the viewers that want to follow you as well. And I just want the viewers to know, be ready, because me and BJ is in talkings with this other organization called the Keys to Life, and we're trying to put together this speaking tour with a lot of guys who I grew up with, like BJ and CJ that's coming home tomorrow, Cliff Jones, and Rick Ross, and a lot of different homeboys of mine. So be on the lookout for that as well, you know, because it's time to spread the message. It's time for youngsters to understand that there's no 401k plan trying to be no thug or drug dealer. And then the two oldest failures in American history, man. The internet is the biggest thing going in America. It's the most powerful thing going in America. You know, you can make you an account, start you up your own home-based store, the whole nine yards. The street corner thing, that is totally dead, out of whack. The oldest hustle in America, bro. You step your game up on the corporate level, and it's me and BJ and other people's job who've done walk that walk and live that way to inspire other children to not even have to ever go that route in life, you know? So
yeah,
I'll pass the mic over to the missus now.
All right.
I just wanted to go back a little bit, BJ, and, you know, when all this was going on and you guys were making all this money, you know, what did Mom and Dad think? I mean, what did they know and what did they think when you guys came back into town and with your fancy cars and fancy clothes and jewelry and recruiting other kids to go out and work for you? I mean, what was the community thinking and what were your parents thinking?
Well, you know what? That is an interesting question. Now, the thing is about that, now this is just my view of it. I think that my people really didn't worry about me because they don't know anything about drug dealers anyway. Drug dealers are unheard of in Mama Town. You know, they don't want to sell drugs, anything like that. Plus, you know how you're worried about a kid when you always hear him here on the streets fighting and shooting and getting drunk. And, you know, so I didn't do any of them things. So my parents really didn't have a whole lot to go by to worry. They seen me, I looked good, I dressed good. You know, I wasn't a drug addict. I never asked them for anything once I left. Matter of fact, I looked out for them. So pretty much, they was kind of proud of me, actually. You know, I want a violent person. I didn't cuff. So, what could they say? There wasn't much they could say to me at all. But, hey, glad to see you. And like the rest of the people in Marianna at that time, when I came home, they were glad to see me. Hey, that was somebody from their little town who had came up.
Right. And I'm sure you helped your parents monetarily and stuff like that. I'm sure, didn't you?
Well, you know, I had my dad just strictly old school. You know, at that time, I couldn't give him a dime. You know, he had his old beat-up truck, old wood shack. He was cool with that, you know.
Yeah.
But over time, you know, he kind of, you know, started taking a different view. You know, except a few dribblings, a few drops here and there, you know, and my father, he's still alive right now. My mom, my parents, both parents here, they're doing good. They still live in Marianna, you know, and.
Now, at that time, when you guys were at your height, how many employees did you have working for you?
Well, me at one solid time, I maybe had maybe 70 at one given time. And if you can believe it or not, that's a massive operation, believe me. You know, although I know
700?
The rumors is that I had. Excuse me.
Did you say 700?
No, 70.
Okay. 70. Only 70.
Only 70, yep. Only 70.
Okay.
But the 70, you can say they worked at like 700.
Yeah, I mean, because there's reports here of different newspaper articles that say you had more than 150 workers. And,
well, see, I probably did have more than 150, but not at one given time.
Okay.
That's what it is. That's where the trick come in at. You know, they'll
say
I had 500,
like crack houses,
you know, crack houses. Well, I didn't have 500 crack houses at one given time.
Right. Now, tell me a little bit about the Wrecking Crew. You know, the media portrayed you guys as pretty mean guys with your crews, and as far as keeping them in hand, that you were pretty violent. Is that true? And can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, you know, in the streets, you know, you always going to come up with a title for everything that takes place. You know,
right.
Don't get me wrong, it was some a team, you know, because, you know, regardless how nice you try to be, regardless how nice you try to be, somebody's going to fight you.
That's part of the street game.
That's part of the game, you know, when people are going to try to get at you. And when people are going
right.
to try to get at you, you know, you got to try to earn your respect, because if you let people bully you around, eventually they'll run completely over you. So it was a team
right.
out there that was ready to respond, just like it was a team out there if a door was jammed or a car didn't start. You know, you had someone to respond to that. And if you had somebody trying to rough the neighborhood off or whatever situation may be, we had someone to respond to that. And when it was time for them to do what they had to do, they did. And some tactics were easier than just going to talk to their parents. You know, just think like if I had a problem out of X, Y, and Z. Instead of going to X, Y, and Z, you'd simply go to maybe his uncle, nephew, mom, cousin, say, look, this is what your family member's doing. We're trying to avoid a disaster. Could you please find him, talk to him, and tell him that we don't want it to go there. However,
right.
if it go there, you know, it's going. And that helped a lot of times. So it was,
right.
so it was different methods.
My man, you know, so you definitely letting them know that it's consequences when you get in that life. You feel me? It's I'm finna run out with the money and I smoke weed with you tomorrow and we'll talk and laugh about me running off with that $100,000. No, you know, the consequences go off with the run game, you know? So
right.
that's just part of that lifestyle. And if you ain't trying to be in that lifestyle, that's something you ain't never got to worry about. You feel me? Because BJ just telling you point blank, it's a dead end, man. You feel me? And it's so many things go bad and wrong in that lifestyle. You feel me? And not many here to tell their testimony like BJ and other guys. You know, you heard what BJ said. He had 45 years, you dig, and won his appeal. So it ain't a lot of times you hit this block and be able to say, God brought me from a mighty long way, you know? So he's a living witness, man. He proved what God can do out here, you know? So we're going to go to another caller as well and get BJ another call on the air.
That's the same one that didn't answer.
Okay, then. So basically, BJ, I want to go to another question to you, man. I want to ask you, man, you know, how... now, do you and Larry speak or get along due to the fact that you was real hurt on him taping them tapes? And every time one of y'all hollers get rushed, they'll find some kind of tape or a pit bull inside, you know? How do you feel about that to this date now?
No, repeat that again so I can understand exactly what you said. Because
I
got a lot of static during that time.
Hello?
How do you feel about that now?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm here. I'm here. Can y'all hear me?
Yeah,
I can hear you now. I lost
you. Okay, yeah, I had lost you.
Did you hear the question, BJ?
No, I didn't hear the question.
Okay, I was saying
I heard the question before we broke up.
Okay. I said it's been 22 years now, and how do you feel 22 years later about Larry taping them videos and they getting the media and DEA hand?
Well, you know what? You know, that's something that I hate that happened, actually. But I guess, you know, certain things, man, just can't be avoided. You know, certain things are just a destiny, because I look at it like this right here. You know, my brother has served plenty of state and federal time. And when he got out of prison, he chose to sell drugs. You know, because he could have gave me advice in the game about prison and the court system, et cetera, et cetera. But he chose not to. So, and to hear for his fellow inmates, to hear that he was involved now in one of the biggest cases in Detroit, and that he was sentenced to life in prison behind him, man. Hey, what can I say? Because if he didn't do, let me just put it this way: if I would have stayed on the street 6 months longer, I'm gonna give it back. 6 months longer, I would have received a life sentence. So thankful to him, and that videotape, the federal government was able to scoop me off the street quicker than they would normally have, and they weren't able to go through the guidelines to sentence me to that life sentence because they weren't really up on sentencing people at that time to life.
Right.
I don't have no animosity. Or hard feelings or towards him, you know, concerning that.
My man, I just wanted to clear the air on that because we seen the BET thing, the original gangster thing, you know, I had told somebody when I seen that, I said, that's my homeboy. I said, BJ, man, we all used to get down together back in the day in Detroit, you know. I said, that's my man.
Right.
That was the first time the American Gangster I'd ever seen it. You know, I'm like, wow, they got a new program thing going on, you know. So it was just ironic, man, when my little homeboy contacted me and said, man, he said, BJ out, man. You know what I mean? I said, what? And that's when he put us together, man. You know what I mean? And at that moment, that was a happy moment in my life, man, because we hadn't seen each other since you was 25. I was 25, you know?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And now you're here after 22 to tell your testimony, man. God is good, man, you know?
No doubt. But this is a touch back on that BET interview. See, you know, that was good for sure.
Right. Because, see, it wasn't really
That was good for sure to say that. But the fact of the matter was that me and my brother is not at the same institution. You know, we always can correspond with one another.
Right. And that's what I had let people know. I said, when I holler at BJ, I said, we're going to put that clear on the air. You get what I'm saying? That his brothers is still on the one. It ain't no animosity. It ain't no we don't talk.
None of that.
So everything you see on TV ain't what it is if you don't really know the person personally and direct. And I just thankful to God that we knew each other and we did our thing back in the day. And now we can work together and educate these youths and these kids out here, man, you know, from lessons done than truly learned out here.
No doubt. Like, you know how the street saying, you know, they got a street saying these days, it is what it is. You know what I'm saying now? You know?
Yeah.
And it is what it is. You know, he remains my brother. You know, regardless if I communicate with him every single day or once every 6 months. You know what I'm saying now? So the media can category as they want to, you know?
Right. My man. You feel me?
And Larry got Natural Life, right?
Larry is in the federal sense, they don't call it natural life, they call it life. But that's exactly what it means, that he will serve his natural life in the federal system unless something miraculous come about that would reduce his sentence or call for him to be released.
Okay, and is he still writing a book about his story as well?
Yes, he do. He actually have a manuscript that I should receive, and probably some early part of next week I should receive a manuscript from him, and I'm going to put a face on the disc and have it edited for him, and hopefully we can have it printed and on the market soon.
Cool. That's good.
And another thing I want to ask you, B, man, I wanted to ask you a question that people didn't want me to ask you, you know. How do you feel about people that's going around here putting your face on T-shirts and all this different stuff and selling your image and and your lifestyle. How do you feel about that?
Well, you know, I guess you can look at them as young entrepreneurs. They not considering all aspects of it. They just looking at it like how I looked at it as a dope game. You know, I'm doing it for the money, regardless who it hurts, you know what I'm saying, or who involved or whatever the situation may be. You know, so, you know, I don't really have no animosity towards them, but it would be good for them to show some type of recognition or acknowledgement and consult with me about that. You know what I'm saying?
My man. And
yeah,
I think
that's all,
right. You definitely got to pay homage to a man who paved the way, whether it was a wrong way or a right way, but paved the way for a lot of cats and opened up the doors for a lot of cats at a very young age. You know, like you said, and I knew it even before you said it on the radio, you left a lot of money in the street. You know what I mean? If cats had to pay, they'd still be paying now, 22 years later. They just had to pay up. You know what I mean? They weren't receiving enough checks to pay. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you were the man who let that go, and you looked at it and said, wow, you know, I done got these football numbers. Now I got to try to swallow this in because I can't see 45 years. I can't even look down the stretch that long, you know? So it was a mind blower for you for a while. So I'm just thanking you for letting these young cats know. Don't glorify the money that BJ and the Chambers brothers made. What BJ is here tonight is to inform you that the streets don't love you back at the end of the day. When you're in that drug life, there's nothing but death or destruction. You ain't gonna walk off and sign up for no 401k play, none of that. You're going to sign off with a death sentence or penitentiary for life sentence, you know. And by the way, BJ and them was one of the causes of Ronald Reagan and them waging war on drugs in the 80s, and that's how Detroit got that 650 law. Anything over 650 grand became natural life. So BJ and them helped create that law back in the day.
Not that anybody's really happy about that law.
let me just let the viewers know also that that the time that I spent in prison, I just want to let them know there's a whole lot of young guys, 18, 19, 20 years old, coming to federal prison with 30 and 40 years. So the federal government is not easing up. They let the hammer fall where it falls. So don't think because you're 18 or 19, 20 years old that you're not facing that much time because they're giving them that much time. I mean, the prison is flooded now with these young guys. And the sad thing about it is a lot of these young guys really didn't make no money out the game. They just happen to make a few dollars, get a car, a few outfits in 30 years. Now, what sense did that make? So we just want the viewers to know that the streets do not love you back.
My man, you know, and we want to have any more announcements you would like to make, BJ. You know, I know you made your announcement that your brother Billy be sending you his manuscript soon. What do Otis have, you know, in progress when he get out this year? And speak a little bit on Willie as well, you know?
Well, Otis is he's a Muslim now, and he in love with a beautiful lady down in Houston, Texas, and I believe that's where he planned to be released, in the Texas area. And Willie, like I mentioned earlier, Willie has been free now for about 3.5 years, and he opened up a club called 20 Grand. In Arkansas, down there in Mariana, actually right next to my mom, and he's doing well, and me myself personally, I'm here in Little Rock, Arkansas, and I choose to come to Little Rock, Arkansas because or Arkansas in general, because this is where I'm actually from, and I figured it would be best for me to come here. in Detroit right now because I knew too many people in Detroit. And I didn't want to start that cycle or that circle back up again. See, here in Arkansas, I know very few people. Matter of fact, I only met a couple of people so far since I've been here. So my life here is really actually peaceful. A few people have bumped into me and just find out who I am down the line, you know, but yet nothing has actually exploded where, you know, people have been rallying around me or want to see me this net because I actually work all day. So, you know, a little history of Otis, Willie, and myself.
My man. So we're going to turn the mic back over to the missus.
Just tell us a little bit about during the height of your career as a drug kingpin, you know, what was it like, you know, being over all of those people and what was your, I mean, how did it feel to be able to buy any car that you wanted and eat anywhere that you wanted and buy all the clothes that you wanted and just do anything you wanted?
Well, you know, I'm at foot of this right here, but you know, it always feels good to be wealthy and to be able to do whatever you want to when you want to, you know. But the people that was with me pretty much was family life. You know, with people that we got to know each other, we hung out with each other. So I didn't look at majority of people that just worked us, you know. And, you know, I bonded with their parents and their brothers and sisters. And so, you know, but how I felt about it, I just felt good, you know, because I felt that I was surrounded by family. And we made money, and we pretty much did what we wanted to when we wanted to.
Right. And then the same question, but after it was all taken away from you and you lost your freedom and you lost everything, in prison, you pretty much had to, you know, ask for everything that you needed or be told what to do and when to do it.
Exactly.
How did you feel then?
Tell us
that.
You know, starting off, you know, it actually is depressing, you know. You know, you confined to a small closet, actually, and you probably roommate with someone in there. And like you said, you got to ask for every single thing that you have changed, you know. So that's very depressing, but once you shake that, and you shake it through family and friends, you know, and they got programs in there such, you know, like church, you know, schooling, you know, recreation, you know, and another thing. And so that kind of brings you back around. And then eventually you accept your condition. And just try to come up with some type of method of doing your time.
Right. And did a lot of people, when you got to that prison, did they know who you were, or was it just kind of new to them as well?
No doubt about it. When I went to prison, you know, when you're in the federal, consents you to any given state at any given time they choose to. Fortunately, I was shipped to Milan, Michigan, which is just minutes from the Metropolitan Airport in Michigan. And so there they house majority of people from Michigan or Ohio or Chicago or Indianapolis. So when I hit the compound there, you know, I was basically, you know, was a celebrity. You know, people knew me personally from the street, and there were people just knew me from the TV.
Right, because so there's a difference in being known and not being known as to how you're treated in the prison and being looked after and
no doubt about that. Even when I was eventually shipped all around the world, that my name had got so large, you know, that it was just like whenever I entered the compound or arrived at the compound, word had went out that, you know, one of the Chambers brothers had made it, and it's DJ. Yeah.
And how did that make you feel? Did that make you feel have a little more comfort knowing that people knew you, you know, knew your name and knew a little bit about you?
Well, it made me feel better because
you know, people who will approach you. Hey, you know, I'm from Detroit or I'm from Chicago. You know, what you need? You know, or I got relatives who's on their way down here soon. If your family members need a ride or if you need something, you know, let me know. So, you know, it's always nice, you know, to be treated nice, you know.
Sure. Definitely.
Yep.
Wow. So how many different prisons were you in?
Well, actually, I started off, like I mentioned, in Milan, Michigan, which is 45 minutes, about 45 minutes roughly from Detroit. I stayed there close to 3.5 years, and I was shipped to Talladega, Alabama. And I spent 4.5 years there, and I was shipped from there to Manchester, Kentucky. I spent 3.5 years there. Then I was shipped back to Milan, Michigan, and I served about 2.5 years there again, you know, there on the second go-round. Then I was shipped from there to a camp in Cumberland, Maryland, and actually I did a furlough transfer by Greyhound bus. I had a 22-hour furlough to get there on my own, and I spent almost 2 years there. And then I was did another furlough transfer to Boyd City, Arkansas, where I was there with one of my brothers, Willie Chambers. I did almost 2 years there at that camp. Then I was shipped from there on another furlough transfer to Yankton, South Dakota. I did 6 months there. And I was shipped from there to Sandstone, Minnesota, and I did 6 months there. And I was shipped from there back to Milan, Michigan, where I did almost 2 years there. And I was shipped from there to Leavenworth, Kansas, where I was paroled.
My man. So they definitely moved you around in the feds.
Oh, yeah, they shipped me. Yeah, they kept me moving. They kept me moving. At any given time, like I say, they can just, hey, pack up, man. You are riding out. And as you can see, I did a lot of rides.
Ain't no mystery, you feel me? And let the youth know you don't want to do none of that riding.
Oh, man, it can be hectic, man, you know, especially if you go through a regular transit. Oh, man, you know, you come out, you know, with a beard and the whole nine yards because sometimes it takes up to months to get there. The federal system now is a little bit better. Normally, some right now is about 30 days, but back then, man, it can take 2 or 3 months to get to one destination.
Wow. That's deep, man, you know? That's real deep. And we just want to say, man, we really, really appreciate you coming on the show tonight, man, and really spreading your message and letting people know you're home and what you're doing to give back to the streets, man, and the youth and everything to keep them about that lifestyle, you know? So I'm going to pass the mic to the missus and she can say our last announcements.
Well, we just want you to know that we have our new book out, Never Hit a Woman, and that's about domestic violence and abuse, and you can get that on our website at thestreetsdontloveyouback.com, as well as our original book, The Streets Don't Love You Back. And that book talks about Rob and BJ and Maserati Rick and just, you know, the whole, everybody back in the 80s in Detroit in the game. So get that book and learn a little bit more about what went on back then. And that's really the only announcement that I have.
All right. Okay. And what we're gonna say once again, with the Never Hit a Woman book, we're looking to raise $25,000 to give back to the women, helping women shelters for women and their kids that's trying to get their life together after domestic abuse and different things and loss of home or different things, you know. So we're trying to do that, and we'll be doing that with the sales from the Never Hit a Woman book towards that charity of ours. And with The Streets Don't Love You Back, we donate proceeds from that book to the Homeless Coalition, which has been our charity for for 21 years now. So we're just giving back, and we have groups on the website that you can join, Men Against Abuse, Women Helping Women group. We have murdered victims of murdered children's group and our promotional group. So we're just asking everybody to log on to www.thestreetsdontloveyoubackmean.com. Let's get involved with helping the youth and giving back to others. And once again, we appreciate my homeboy from back in the day, BJ Chambers, for being on the show tonight. And we just want to give him his last words.
Yeah, I'd like to thank you for allowing me on the show. You know, I really enjoyed myself. And I hope the viewers were able to get something out of the message that we sent tonight. And like we mentioned earlier, if anyone would like to contact me, they're more than welcome to do so. Just contact Rob. He know how to get in contact with me immediately. And I got my Facebook page. You can contact me on Facebook. And if you'd like a copy of my book, I don't have a copy at this time. We have sold out. And we have some printed in the next 30 days. And you'll be more than welcome to purchase one. And hopefully, again, soon, Rob, you allow me back on the show again.
Oh, ain't no doubt, BJ. You know, you're always welcome. We're fam for life. You know that. And we just want to say, as soon as our BJ book come in, we will be selling it on our website as well, the Streets Don't Love You Back.com site and our store. So as soon as that book come available, we'll be having it right there on the website. And also to all authors across the world, we ask you to join our book club on our website as well. And BJ, our book is in our book club on our website. So let's join, let's stay involved, and we can do it, you know what I mean? One child at a time, you know, and it's time to just uplift and not tear down, you know? So,
no doubt.
American Gangster himself, BJ Original, glad you're home, homeboy, and we appreciate it, man. You dig? And much love to Otis, much love to Willie, and much love to Larry, and much love to the whole old school clique, Cliff Jones, Maserati Red, Kimmy Cole. You get what I'm saying? Big Head, you know, Meech, the whole nine yards, you dig?
No doubt.
We
out.
Peace and love. And always remember, the streets don't love you back.
Good night, and we'll see you next Wednesday night. We're going to go out with a song. You played yourself. Have a great week.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is BOYD and Struggle coming straight at you, baby. Much love to my homeboys up in Detroit off Van Acken Harbor. Much love goes out to my homeboys in Cincy that's always kept it real. And to your player haters, this goes out to you. No need to look any further. Look like brother, what you thought? Boy, Greg is knocking you out like rubber, touching does it go. Made you pull up with this northern exposure. Smoking Doja, and I'm coming on the real. Yes, the real, I thought I told you. And I'm feeding into your bloodstream just like HIV. Stand away from all them player hating people with degrees. It's time to come up. Why do you better not run up? Because you put your faith and your plans into another man's head. That move is bogus. Struggle's here to let you know this. That you never ever be a part of the dope. Who put your faith in the spot? Who cooled it off when it was hot? Who made it live when it was? Now you can't even speak it. It's time to nudge it. Time for respect. Time to break necks. You wanted out for family. Now it's time for you to check. And you chasing waterfalls that wasn't meant, fool. In other words, you played yourself. Now who's cool? Hey, girl, you played yourself. No, 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 you played yourself. Hey, girl, you played yourself. You played yourself. Hey, girl, you played yourself. Wait a minute, you played yourself. Because you didn't play the cards that was dealt. Partner, you played yourself. You tried to engage yourself with some people who didn't have no freaking wealth. So watch your health. Ain't nothing good gonna come out your freaking game. Cause everything you do bad gonna come back twice the pain. Who's to blame? Listen to the black rain. About to shake the ground for all you black stabbing people in this town. I'm known to bring the anger, make you hiss like a snake. Here's a hint from my partner.
Break it down in your face.
Hey, yo, I'm biggity black up in you two. Dissect you like my canvas. You played yourself, and I was a witness. Your career's finished. Don't be misled by the words that I speak. I keep it real. You had a taste of both sides. Not how it feels.
Hey, yo, you played yourself.
No, 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 you played yourself.
I said you played yourself.
You played yourself.
Hey, yo, you played yourself.
Wait a minute. You played yourself, because you didn't play the cards that was dealt.
You can be as good as
as the best of them and bad as the worst of them. But don't test me, brother. No, brother, don't test me, no.
You be like that Benedict on the backstabbing brother behind my back. But in my face, you be like struggle, yo. Where the party at? I be like push on. Get on, get out my face, partner. Cause ain't no love lost, and ain't no love here neither. I can't believe that you betrayed me. Took food from my face, but you have been acting kind of shady lately. So I got to push you to the curb. Fly away like a bird. Partner, you need to stop smoking all that herb. If you would've came to me, Imano, Imano, we would've squashed it at the gate. But you chose to segregate. Play a hate, get it straight. Partner, you played yourself. No, 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 you played yourself.
Hey, yo, you played yourself.
You played yourself.
You played yourself.
Wait a minute, you played yourself. Cause you didn't play the cards that was dealt. Brother, relax your mind and let your conscience be free. Get down to the sounds of struggling I'll be. Your negativity be scratching against my surface. Cause the things that I did for you, your ass can deserve it. Now I'm on some payback for the things you did like way back. Answering all your questions like my name was Pat Sajak. Jesus had 12 disciples and one wasn't true. And he knew, like I knew, I never ever should to mess with you, so I'm gonna do what I gotta do and then some. If a brother try to flex, I take his life for ransom. Even when I'm by myself, I roll with a crew of soldiers, thick as blue with those. Known to turn your body black and blue, I told you, why did you test me? I'm the one who put you on, see if it wasn't for me, you'd be like a mobile phone on Rome, cheat. It ain't no me and us, it ain't no he and we. I thought we would be together like OJ and AC. You were that brother I pull a trigger for. You a freaking beard for. Now you just that off-brand nigga roll. You played yourself. No, 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 no. I said you played yourself. Hey, yo, you played yourself. No, partner, you played yourself.
Hey, yo, you played yourself.
Wait a minute, you played yourself. Cause you didn't play the cards that was dealt.
You can be as good as the best of them and bad as the worst of them. But don't test me, brother. No, brother, don't test me, no.
Why did you test me, Miss Gangster? I told you don't ever tempt me. But now I gotta come at you for real now. You should have kept it real. But when you don't keep it real, situations sometimes get hectic in your life. But you should have understood. So why did you play yourself, player? I look at you all the time when you don't think I see you. I see you. Our boys up north, baby. We got our own way of dealing with player haters.
Come on. Bring it in. Bring it in. Come on.
And I don't think you should ever did what you did. Sometimes I know you had nightmares waking up sweating and things.